Questions 41 through 45. Listen to the talk about the International Dateline.
Those of you who have traveled from the U.S. to Europe or Asia or across continents know that during the journey, one can gain or lose time while being transported from one point on the Earth's surface to another. When passengers are traveling eastward, for example, from New York to London, the time of day is an hour later with each time zone they cross. Heading westward, for example, from Los Angeles to Asia, passengers notice that the time of day is an hour earlier with each time zone. However, an imaginary line that runs through the Pacific Ocean, called the International Date Line, changes the current date, and in Los Angeles, the calendar date is one day earlier than it would be in Asia. According to the conventions of measuring time across the globe, a calendar day runs from midnight to midnight in any locality. To simplify date divisions, in the modern time of air travel, international stock markets, internet, and satellites, the Earth is divided into 24 north to south standard time zones, and somewhere in the world a new date begins every hour, when the time on the meridian that marks the date change is midnight. The international date line falls loosely along the 180th meridian of longitude that actually forms an ellipsis and connects with the prime meridian at 0 degrees longitude. I say loosely because the date line is not rigid, but it deviates east or west of the meridian to allow small groups of islands and the people who populate them to have the same calendar as New Zealand. In other cases, dateline divisions can be somewhat more political. For example, when the Aleutian Islands have the same date as Alaska, but not the Bering Strait.
Question number 41. What is the main purpose of the lecture? Question number 42. What does the lecturer say about travel east and west? Question number 43. According to the lecturer, how should airplane passengers adjust their day counts? Question number 44. Based on the lecture, what is the approximate marker of the date change? Question number 45. Why does the lecturer mention New Zealand? Questions 46 and 47. Listen to the talk given by a history professor.
Today we will begin our examination of the first polar explorations. To start, I'd like to present a brief overview, and then we can discuss the interesting points in greater detail. The first explorers of the northern regions 2,000 years ago were Greeks from Massilia who discovered a new territory hundreds of miles north of the British Isles, which the Greek record-keeper called Thule. Based on the records of that exploratory voyage led by Pytheas, it is not possible to tell with certainty whether the newly discovered landmass was today's Iceland or any number of small islands near the coast of Norway. Following the initial voyage, polar expeditions did not resume until more than 1,000 years later, when a ship sailed around the northern tip of Norway in what is now known as the White Sea. During the 9th and 10th centuries, Viking settlements emerged in Iceland and the southern coast of Greenland. However, no archaeological evidence has been found that the Viking settlers moved further north toward the enormous ice-covered regions near or around the North Pole. Many centuries later, the Spanish and the Portuguese came to dominate the Indian trade and southern sea routes, thus precluding the passage of English and Dutch marine merchants. So, in fact, it was the English and the Dutch who undertook the first explorations of the northern seas in an attempt to find alternate navigable routes along the north coast of Asia or North America. In their search for the Northwest Passage, the English were also the first to determine that their sailing ships were no match for the ice in the Arctic Ocean. Around the end of the 16th century, after the English fleet defeated the Spanish Armada, the southern sea routes became open to all merchants, and the need for the explorations of the Arctic was greatly reduced.
Question number 46. What is the main topic of the lecture? Question number 47. What does the professor say about the Portuguese? Questions 48 through 50. Listen to the lecture on food and nutrition.
The study of food and nutrition is a science that encompasses all aspects of food processing that the human body needs to live, grow, function, fight diseases, and heal. The foods someone eats regularly or often are called a diet. Contrary to a popular belief, a diet does not refer to reductions in food intake in order to lose weight. Energy represents one of the body's most fundamental needs, and to obtain energy, it converts food into fuel that is burned in the presence of oxygen. I should point out that all activity of the body requires energy, including breathing and blinking, as well as chopping wood and running up the stairs. Similarly, energy is required to repair damaged tissue, grow new cells, and regulate such essential systems as blood flow and temperature maintenance. The functioning of the body systems requires appropriate supplies of nutrients, which are divided into six major categories: water, proteins, carbohydrates, fats, vitamins, and minerals. Proteins are small units of amino acids requisite for rebuilding and growing tissue. It is widely known that a human body consists mostly of water, and proteins are the second greatest substance in body composition, or possibly third with the inclusion of fat. Good sources of protein can be found in meat, poultry, fish, milk, and eggs. For vegetarians, beans, peas, whole grain bread, cereals, and nuts can also do an excellent job. On the other hand, carbohydrates supply a little over half of all calories consumed by Americans. Starches found in potatoes, corn, wheat, and rice, as well as various types of sugars, provide most carbohydrates that are converted into energy. Sugars are not necessary for the functioning of the body, and they provide energy without nutrition. These are sometimes referred to as empty calories. Foods rich in carbohydrates, such as grains, are also the crucial sources of protein in most countries of the world where meat, fish, and legumes are relatively scarce.
Question number 48. According to the lecture, what types of foods are included in a diet? Question number 49. Based on the lecture, what can be excellent sources of protein? Question number 50. According to the lecture, what food sources are not essential for the human body? Stop working on section 1.